Welcome to Circle Round Live at the Boston Book Festival. Yay! So I'm going to keep this very short, but I just want to say one thing, is that on your way out, everyone's going to get a coloring book, one per child. And parents, I have a note for you. There is a word search at the back, and it says there's an answer key, and I will put it up today, I promise. It's challenging, so you'll have fun with that too. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome the stars of the show, Rebecca Shear and Eric Shimalonis, and their talented crew of actors. So let's give them a nice round of applause.
Well, hey, everybody. I'm Rebecca Shear. Welcome to Circle Round Live. Is it raining yet outside? Did it start raining? Thank you for coming out on this rainy, chilly morning to the Boston Book Festival and Circle Round Live. We're doing two stories today. One is from season one of the podcast. One is from season two. The first story today originally comes from many parts of the Middle East, and our version is called The Unwelcome Guest. The town beside the sea was abuzz with the news. The governor was holding a grand banquet, and everyone was invited. The artists and accountants, the librarians and lawyers, the taxi drivers and teachers, everyone. But no one was as excited as Nasruddin. The wise man owned a vineyard at the edge of town, and the governor would be serving Nasruddin's wine at the feast. The day of the big event, Nasruddin woke up extra early. He dug deep into his closet and began rummaging around.
All right, where are you? No, not that one. No, not that. Whoa! There you are.
Nasruddin smiled as he pulled out his long red silk coat. It was his favorite piece of clothing, embroidered with clusters of bright purple grapes. Nasruddin only wore the coat on very special occasions, and definitely not at the vineyard, where he spent most days kneeling in the dirt and sweating in the sun as he trimmed vines and picked grapes before crushing them to make wine. So that morning, Nasruddin laid the coat on his bed, along with a nice shirt, perfectly pressed pants, and his shiniest shoes.
I can hardly wait for tonight. I'll come right home after work, I'll get all scrubbed up, and then head straight to the party.
Then he set off for the vineyard. Nasruddin worked especially hard all day, and when he finally looked up at the clock, the governor's banquet was starting in 15 minutes.
Oh, no.
Nasruddin looked down at his clothes. Smudges of mud and splotches of grape juice were everywhere. The front and back of his shirt were clammy with sweat.
Oh, with just 15 minutes until the party starts, there's no time for me to go home, get cleaned up, and change into my fine silk coat. I'll just have to go as I am.
Nasruddin saddled up his donkey and headed to the governor's mansion. When he arrived, he tied the donkey to a tree and walked toward the door attendants. As he approached, they scrunched up their faces.
Do you smell what I smell?
It's almost like squished grapes.
And sweat.
Ew. Oh.
Not hearing what they were saying, Nasruddin gave the attendants a friendly wave and breezed through the door. When he stepped inside the banquet hall, he saw the entire village milling about, everyone dressed in their very finest clothing and sipping on Nasruddin's wine. Nasruddin had always been a friendly, talkative sort, so he began making the rounds.
Hi, how are you? Hi, hello.
But as he greeted his friends and neighbors, he noticed no one greeted him back. Instead, they turned away.
Huh. What's gotten into everybody?
To make things worse, not even the butlers carrying trays of food would come near him. Nasruddin had been too busy to eat all that day, so his mouth watered as he watched the elusive parade of meats, cheeses, breads, and spreads.
Well, this is weird. This is just plain weird. At the very least, the governor will talk to me. I mean, she is serving my wine, after all.
But as Nasruddin approached, the governor looked the wise man up and down, frowned, then waved at someone across the room and hurried away.
What's going on? What's the matter with these people?
When the bell rang for dinner, a scowling butler ushered Nasruddin to a corner of the room, as far away as possible from the governor.
Right this way, please.
As Nasruddin took his seat, the butler held out a bundle of bright white napkins.
Here. I can't say these will hide the smell, but at least they'll cover up those stains.
Rolling her eyes, the butler dropped the napkins in Nasruddin's lap, turned on her heel, and walked away. Suddenly, Nasruddin understood.
Ha! So it's my clothing everybody has a problem with. I can't believe this. Seriously? The governor's invited the entire town, everybody, rich and poor, to her party. And yet, because of what I'm wearing, I'm an unwelcome guest?
Now remember, Nasruddin was a wise man. And that's when he had an idea.
Uh-huh.
Before dinner was served, Nasruddin slid his chair away from the table and slipped out of the banquet hall. As he exited the mansion, he took a deep breath of the warm night air and smiled.
Well, I may be an unwelcome guest, but I'll bring back a guest that they'll most definitely welcome. I just have to act fast.
Then he jumped on his donkey and headed home. Back at his house, he pumped extra bubbly soap into a steaming hot bath and climbed in. He scrubbed from his head to his toes. Then he dusted himself with powder and buttoned up his fancy shirt and pants. Finally, he slipped on his long red silk coat, the one embroidered with clusters of bright purple grapes. He took one last look at himself in the mirror.
Look at you. You look marvelous.
And rushed back to the governor's feast. This time, when Nasruddin walked toward the door attendants, instead of scrunching up their faces, they smiled.
Good evening, sir.
It's an honor to have you.
Come in.
When Nasruddin entered the banquet hall, the very same butler from before, the one who'd rudely dropped the napkins in his lap, she came running over.
Good sir, might I escort you to the governor's table right this way?
As Nasruddin followed the butler, people waved and called to him from all corners of the room.
Nasruddin!
Hi!
Hello!
How are you?
You look marvelous!
When Nasruddin reached the governor's table, the dignitary leapt up and enwrapped him in a hug.
Nasruddin, my good man, such an honor to have you here. Please, sit next to me and eat all you want. My cooks have prepared enough tantalizing food to feed an entire country, let alone a town.
Nasruddin did as he was told and sat next to the governor. Immediately, a waiter brought a glistening plate of roasted bell peppers. Now remember, Nasruddin hadn't eaten all day. He'd been too busy working. But instead of gobbling up the peppers, one by one he picked them up and stuffed them into the pockets of his coats.
Mmm, peppers. These look so good. Here you go, coat.
The guests seated around Nasruddin stared in astonishment. When the next course arrived, a fragrant bowl of lentil soup, Nasruddin blew on the soup to cool it off and then, yes, poured it into the pockets of his coat.
I know how much you love soup. Enjoy, coat.
By now, everyone in the room was gaping at Nasruddin. With every new course, the waiters brought cucumber salad.
Ooh, coat, taste these.
Zucchini fritters.
Hey, coat, have a nibble of these.
Lamb kebabs.
Bon appetit.
Nasruddin didn't eat a bite. Instead, he dumped everything into the pockets of his long red silk coat. Now, all this time, the governor had been frozen in her seat, her eyes wider than the bowl of soup Nasruddin had poured into his coat pockets. Finally, she spoke up.
Nasruddin, with all due respect, what are you doing?
Nasruddin looked up innocently.
Who, me? Well, I'm feeding my coat, of course.
I can see that, but why feed a coat? I mean, all this delicious food we have here. What a waste.
Nasruddin smiled.
Oh, you see it as a waste, huh? You see, I don't see it as a waste at all.
I don't understand.
Nasruddin stood up and looked around the crowded room. He cleared his throat, and the bustling room became silent.
My dear friends and neighbors, when I first arrived at this feast tonight, I was dressed in my work clothes, all smudged and stained and smelly, and nobody, including you, Governor, nobody gave me the time of day. You all treated me like I was nothing.
The guests in the banquet hall felt their faces burn red with shame. The governor hung her head. Then she placed her hand on Nasruddin's shoulder.
What you say is true, Nasruddin. And on behalf of everyone, I'm truly sorry. But I'm still confused. Why feed your coat?
The wise man's eyes twinkled.
Well, you see, after the way each and every one of you treated me, I went back home and I changed into this coat. And I come back and I'm greeted with smiles. And it was my coat that made all the difference. And I realized it wasn't me that you wanted at this party. It was my coat. So what else could I do but feed all of your delectable food to the coat? See, I'm the unwelcome guest at this party. So my coat must be the welcome one.
And with that, he walked out of the banquet hall, puddles and pieces of food trailing behind him. From then on, everyone in town thought twice before treating people based on their appearance. They remembered it's what's inside that matters most. Just as the wise man had hoped, Nasruddin's lesson proved to be some very precious and very scrumptious food for thought. Thank you. Now, versions of our next story have been told in many, many countries, from France, Portugal, and Sweden to Russia and Jamaica and beyond. We call our telling of this tale Latchkey Stew. Should we hold until that other music is no longer playing?
Yeah. Oh.
So it's like a raging metal concert. Eric cannot compete with his Glockenspiel.
Great. Instruments.
Well, while we're talking about instruments, Eric does not have an electric guitar with him. This is called a Glockenspiel. Does anyone know what member of what family the Glockenspiel is a member of? Anyone? It's not the strings. I see a hand. Say that again. The heavy metal guy was a little louder than you. Ukuleles.
Oh.
Or violin. Oh, this. This is a stringed instrument, just like a ukulele and a violin. It's called the oud, and it's a lute that comes from the Middle East. Eric bought that from Istanbul, Turkey. We have many instruments in our house because every episode of Circle Round has a different instrument underscoring it. And each season, Eric's mission is to never repeat the instrument. So we have 42 instruments in our house at this point. 43 as of next week. So that's Eric Shimalonis. He's our composer. He's our sound designer. He's also my husband.
Shall we
get started?
All right.
Here we go. This is called Latchkey Stew. It had been a long, hard winter on the small farm where Rachel lived with her mother. And after so many months of snow and cold, they both were very tired and very hungry. What little grain they had, they fed to their cows, who provided a bit of milk, and to their chickens, who laid a few eggs every now and again. But otherwise, Rachel and her mother were left with grumbling bellies as they eagerly awaited the spring.
Rachel, once all this snow melts, we'll be able to harvest some vegetables and either eat them or sell them at the market. But for now, we have next to nothing. How will we make it till spring comes? Do you have any ideas?
Well, we may not have much, Mother, but we have each other. That's the most important thing. As for finding something for us to eat, don't you worry. I'll set off down the road first thing tomorrow and figure out something.
The next morning, Rachel hugged her mother goodbye and set off down the road. In her knapsack were some scraps of food and an old tin pot so she could cook as she traveled. She passed through dense forests and rolling meadows. She crossed rivers and streams. Every now and again, she stopped to light a fire and cook a meager meal in her tin pot. By the third day, Rachel was all out of food, and her stomach was empty as a scooped-out pumpkin. As she climbed down a big steep hill, she found herself in a sunny valley. So sunny, in fact, that it felt way too warm to be winter.
Why, the snow is melting already. I can see the lush green grass poking up from the earth.
But that wasn't all Rachel could see. Tucked away in this warm, sunny valley was a town. A comfortable-looking town with elegant houses and tidy front lawns. Rachel noticed most of the house's windows were open to let the warm breeze blow in. But when she looked at the house's front doors, Rachel noticed something odd.
Locks! Every single house has at least half a dozen locks on the door. Padlocks, deadlocks, latchkey locks. I wonder what all these people are trying to protect. Well, it doesn't matter. Their houses look nice and their yards are pristine. They must have more than enough to be content. No doubt they will have plenty of food to share with a hungry traveler.
Rachel walked up to a lovely red house and knocked on the front door. A voice called out from inside.
Who's there?
Please, ma'am. My mother and I had a tough winter on our farm, and we are very hungry. I've come a long way to ask for something to eat. Might you have any food to share?
Rachel heard a series of jingles, jangles, clicks, and clacks as the woman undid the many locks on her door. She opened it a crack and peeked her face out. Rachel noticed she was squinting her eyes suspiciously.
Some food to share with a stranger. I've worked hard for everything I have, and I won't even share it with my own neighbors. So the answer is no.
And with that, the woman slammed the door shut right in Rachel's face. Rachel was shocked, but thinking of her hungry mother back home, she was also determined. So she walked down the road to another house. And another, and another. Yet every time she knocked on a lock-filled door and asked for food, she heard the same thing.
Share food with you?
A complete stranger.
Do you know how hard I work to get the food I have?
Not even my neighbors can get their hands on it.
The answer is
no.
After a few hours of this, Rachel was hungrier and more confused than ever.
I don't understand. All these people, they seem so well off, and yet they won't share. If I lived in one of their fancy houses, I'd share everything I had, and I certainly wouldn't put all those locks on my door. I mean, with so many locks, can you imagine all the keys you'd have?
That's when Rachel had an idea.
But of course, keys!
Rachel ran around the valley, picking up twigs and branches. She filled her tin pot with crystal clear water from the stream. Then, in the middle of the road, in front of all the houses. She used the twigs and branches to build a fire. She placed her pot on top of the fire. As the water began to boil, the bubbles grew bigger and bigger. Soon, the sound of bubbling water was drifting through the village, right through the open windows of all the houses. The first woman Rachel encountered stuck her head out a window on the second floor.
Hey! Yoo-hoo! Who are you anyway? And what in the world do you think you're doing boiling water in the middle of the street?
Rachel smiled her warmest smile.
Why, hello again. My name is Rachel, and I'm just making stew.
Just then, another neighbor popped his head out of his window.
Did I hear you say you're making stew? In the middle of the road? What kind of stew?
Rachel turned to the man.
What kind of stew, you ask? Why, only the most delicious stew you've ever tasted. You see, this stew is magic.
Magic?
Now a third neighbor popped her head out of her window.
Tell us, exactly how do you make this magic stew?
Rachel glanced at the locks on all the neighbors' doors.
Well, first, I'll need a very special ingredient. Tell me, might you have any keys?
Why, yes. It just so happens I have plenty of keys.
As do I.
I do too.
Wonderful. I'll take one from each of you.
The neighbors' heads all disappeared from their windows. Within moments, Rachel once again heard jingles, jangles, clicks, and clacks as the neighbors undid the many locks on their doors. She smiled to herself as her plot began to play out.
This latchkey stew could be the key to teaching these people how to share. Let's hope my plan works.
One by one, the neighbors dashed out of their houses and thrust a pile of keys into Rachel's open hands.
Thank you. These keys will make excellent stew. The only problem is, I'm using such a small pot. I won't be able to make much latchkey stew, I'm afraid.
The first woman Rachel had met that day, the very first person to slam the door and refuse to share any food, she spoke up.
Well, I'm pretty sure I have a bigger pot tucked away somewhere. I'll go get it.
That would be wonderful. Thank you. Huh. Not bad for folks who claim they wouldn't even share with their own neighbors.
As Rachel waited for the bigger pot to arrive, she heard even more jingles, jangles, clicks, and clacks as even more neighbors undid the many locks on their doors and rushed outside.
We heard you're making latchkey stew.
Latchkey stew? Is it true?
I've never heard of latchkey stew. It must be magic.
By now, the entire town had filed out onto the street. Rachel swapped her small tin pot for the larger one and filled that larger pot with water. One by one, she dropped the neighbor's keys into the pot. Then Rachel stirred the water, tasted it, and stirred it some more.
What this latchkey stew needs now, I think, is some salt and pepper.
Oh, I have salt and pepper. I'll be right back.
When the neighbor returned with the salt and pepper, Rachel sprinkled in a bit of each. Then she tried another taste.
I can taste the magic working already. But when I make this latchkey stew, I sometimes help it along by adding a carrot.
I'm sure I can give you many carrots. I'll run home and fetch them.
Wonderful! And no batch of latchkey stew is complete without potatoes.
I have potatoes. I'll be back in a flash.
The neighbors scurried to their houses and came back with armloads of carrots and potatoes. They even helped Rachel slice the vegetables into the stew. Rachel stirred and tasted, tasted and stirred.
You know, the last time I made latchkey stew, I added far more ingredients than this. Something is missing, but I can't figure out what.
Suddenly, much to Rachel's delight, all the neighbors began to chime in.
What about sweet potatoes? I can bring sweet potatoes.
And I can bring squash.
I have mushrooms.
Ooh, I have oregano.
I'll go get beets.
I'll go get some turnips.
As Rachel watched the growing excitement, she couldn't help but beam from ear to ear.
Well, my friends, no need to wait. Bring everything. Everything! We can put all of it into the pot.
Within minutes, vegetables were flying through the air and landing in the stew with a splash. The pot grew fuller and fuller, and the stew grew richer and richer. Before long, the huge pot was filled to the brim. The simmering stew sent out puffs of fragrant steam, and the most scrumptious smell drifted through the air. Again, Rachel stirred and tasted, tasted and stirred. The neighbors looked at her with wide eyes and watering mouths.
Well?
Is the latchkey stew ready?
Rachel put one last spoonful of stew to her lips. She took a long sip.
Good news, my friends. At last, the stew is ready. But here's the thing about latchkey stew. It's bad luck to eat it alone. So it looks like you'll all have to join me!
With that, the neighbors immediately jumped into action.
I'll run and grab some tables.
Oh, I'll help you carry them.
And I'll bring chairs.
Oh, me too.
I'll lend my bowls and spoons.
And I'll bring tablecloths and candles.
This is becoming quite the party.
The neighbors set the tables right in the middle of the road. As they straightened tablecloths and lit candles, they chattered amongst themselves like excited schoolchildren.
It's not every day we get to eat latchkey stew. Don't you think a fine meal like this one deserves some bread?
Yes, and cheese.
Oh, and bowls of fresh fruit.
Rachel watched with pleasure as the neighbors suggested more and more side dishes for the latchkey stew.
Listen, my friends, the more, the merrier. If you have more to share, we will share even more of a feast.
The neighbors laughed and giggled as they ran home to grab more food. As they sat down to eat, everyone's smile was as big as the pot of latchkey stew.
All right, everybody, let's dig in.
For a few moments, all you could hear was the sound of spoons scraping against bowls. Then, some slurping.
Oh, my goodness!
Have you ever tasted such glorious stew?
And when was the last time we all sat down for a feast like this?
Gosh, I don't know that we ever have.
And to think, all of this delicious magic started with a handful of keys.
The banquet continued well into the night. The neighbors told stories, sang songs, and when it grew too dark and chilly to remain outside, they undid every single lock on their doors and opened their homes to continue celebrating inside.
What about you, Rachel?
Won't you come celebrate with us?
Our doors are wide open.
Rachel smiled and reached for her knapsack.
Oh, my friends. I wish I could, but it's time I go back to my mother. She's been home all this time, waiting for me to bring food to get us through the rest of the winter.
Well, why didn't you say so?
We have plenty of food to spare.
My goodness, you were kind enough to share your magic latchkey stew with us.
The least we can do is share our food with you.
The neighbors grabbed Rachel's knapsack and ran from house to house, stuffing the bag with all sorts of fruits and vegetables. Then they found a wooden box and loaded it with cheese and eggs. They took another box and piled it high with bread.
Wow, what generosity. So much food. But I have a long journey ahead of me, and I'm not sure how I'll be able to carry it all.
Just then, one of the neighbors walked up leading a tall, brown horse.
Rachel, this was an evening and a stew to remember. Please, take this horse and ride home safely to your mother.
Rachel was so touched, her eyes filled with tears.
How can I ever thank you? I know.
She reached into her apron pocket and rummaged around. Then she pulled out, any guesses? What'd she pull out? The keys! The same keys the neighbors had given her to start the latchkey stew.
As a token of my gratitude and appreciation, I give you back your keys. You see, now they've been touched with the magic of the latchkey stew. So you all can come together and make this special stew whenever you wish.
And with that, Rachel climbed onto her new horse, waved her new friends farewell, and galloped back home to her mother. As the years passed, the neighbors came together quite frequently to make latchkey stew. With all their celebrating, they eventually misplaced one of the keys Rachel had given them. Then another, and another. Finally, all of the magic keys were gone. But the neighbors realized they could come together and make and enjoy latchkey stew without any keys. Because you see, the magic ingredient in latchkey stew, it isn't the latchkey. It's the sharing. Thank you so much, everyone. I want to name our actors that are with us today, and then I want a big circle round of applause. We have Shianbare Animishan, Rachel Bellman, Emily DiPietro, Adam Mastriani, Louis Negron, Jeff Song, and Lisa Ewan. And of course, Circle Round would not be Circle Round without our composer slash sound designer slash musician extraordinaire, Eric Shimalonis. Wow, what a thrill to perform. Thank you so much for coming. Thanks to the Boston Book Festival for having us. Thank you, BUR, for making Circle Round possible in the first place. Jessica did mention the coloring books. They are brand new, hot off the presses. They have pictures you can color, activities you can do. Sabina Hahn did all the illustrations. Please pick one up on your way out. And if you're a grown-up and you haven't already, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram. We'd love to keep in touch with you. We respond to all the messages. So that just about does it. I'm Rebecca Shear. Thanks for circling around with us. Thanks.